the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone, and Happy New Year. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and as Jim just said, it is a new year, that time of year when people make their resolutions. They set those goals that they're going to falter on in February and break in March for the rest of the year. Hopefully, you won't be among them, because what we're doing today on the program is take a look, as we start this new year, on some resolutions and steps you need to get into retirement shape. And what we're going to do is provide guidelines to focus you, whether you're 5 or 10 years out from retirement, or even just 1 year, of things that you should be doing prior to retirement. We'll put that in a framework that makes sense and get you happily on the road to being in retirement shape. So what is it? Pilates? Some other form of thing? Paleo diet? You know, maybe there's a paleo economic
diet. Deep breathing?
Yeah, deep breathing, yoga, what?
Actually, there's quite a few steps, John, and since we're calling this getting into retirement shape, actually the first step is defining your retirement. In other words, you need to decide if you retire, what is that retirement going to look like? What are you going to be doing? How are you going to be spending your time? And it's really important, you know, you just don't want to say, hey, I want to retire in 5 years. I'm going to retire at age 65, 66, whatever it is. What you want to do is be specific. I want to retire at age 66, and I'm going to semi-retire, or maybe I'm going to work part-time, or maybe there's another skill set or something else that I have that I'm going to pursue. Maybe it's a hobby or something that you have that you never had the time during your working career, and now you have the time. Well, make time for that. But what you want to do is you want to be as specific as you can. Now, basically, when you retire, that evolves over time, depending on health and finances and things that you might find yourself wanting to do, to learn or take up when you have all that free time. And it's something that I think, and especially for those of you married, it should be something that you both agree on. And it may be, if both of you are still working, it may be something that happens over time. For example, one spouse might retire 1 year, and for Social Security reasons or another, the other spouse may retire in a couple of years. And, you know, the other thing, too, you may want to ask yourself, and especially if you have friends who are retired, suppose you're in a job or you have a business and you enjoy what you're doing. So you might ask yourself, hey, do I really want to retire? Or maybe I'm just going to slow it down a pace and maybe take things a little easier, maybe not work as many hours and allow myself some free time. And here's something that's really important, and this also has to do with health. They found that those that work longer live longer. That's number one. Number two, those that stay active in some kind of capacity, either community work, involvement, maybe semi-retirement work, actually live longer and healthier lives as well. So you might want to think about that, what that retirement is going to look like. And you want to get a general idea of what you might want to do, because a lot of times people say, well, I want to retire at an age. That's not enough, because what you want or how you see that retirement is going to define, in many ways, your finances and your budget. And there's several things that you want to define in terms of things that maybe you wanted to do. Maybe there's something that you want to save up for. Maybe you want to travel, and your idea of traveling is getting a motor home. Or, like myself, boating or sailing, getting a motor yacht and cruising someplace. Whatever it is, but you want to put it down, because it's going to define many of the other things that we're going to be talking about that follow.
And one of the things that we've mentioned frequently here on the program that people need to do, but it takes a little effort, and that is putting together a budget. I mean, sort of looking at what your gazintas and gazoutas are now, you know, debits and credits, and what you anticipate that to be during retirement. And that gives you the framework that you can start your planning.
Absolutely, John. And it also may define your retirement, the kind of retirement that you're going to have, and when you retire. This is sort of where dreams meet reality. I've had clients walk into my office and say, you know, I want to retire at age 65, 62, or whatever the age is. And we go through the budget and we take a look at the finances, the assets, and there just simply isn't the income. So that may push you forward on another path. It may be delaying retirement. It may be involving semi-retirement, in other words, where you work part-time or do something different. But what's really important is to have a budget. And you need to have that budget broken up into four or five parts. One is what I call the essential budget. You hear us talk about it. What does it cost to live? Housing, medical, food, dental, utilities, phone bills, cell phone bills. Those are the things that we call essentials, the things that you use and pay for on a day-to-day basis. Discretionary, things that might be a hobby. Say that you want to join a golf club. Or, for example, travel, more extensive travel, not just a vacation, but now that you're retired, well, you can travel all year round. And so maybe instead of a 1 week vacation, maybe you're going to go to Europe for a couple weeks, or you're going to go to Australia or someplace like that. Discretionary. And then you need to have a want to have budget. These are things that you thought about, gosh, if I was retired, boy, I'd love to get in a motorhome, drive around the country, have a sailboat, have a motorboat, whatever your hobbies are. You know, maybe you're going to get into photography. I had one client who had a sport car and he wanted to upgrade his sport car because in his sport car club, they take these little road trips where they go on tours. And so he wanted a sport car. And the other thing he took up was photography, ended up having his own photography lab. So those are the things of what I call the want-to-haves. And be sure this is something that you're probably not thinking if you're looking at your budget. Include $10,000 to $11,000 a year you tack onto your budget for healthcare costs, because you might not need it now, but if you're not needing it now, you should be putting aside $10,000, $11,000, $12,000 a year into a special fund, because you're going to need to draw on that over the years as you get older, whether it's going to be increase in Medicare premiums, which are coming, because we now have a four-tiered Medicare cost system, increase for prescription drugs, and, God forbid, long-term care. Because the average person right now, as of 2017, will spend $260,000 out-of-pocket expenses for two of you during lifetime. And for many of you in the upper income scales, because of the four-tiered pricing system with Medicare, it may be even more, and especially as government puts and shifts more and more of the medical burdens onto you, the retiree. So be sure you want to do that. And then you might want to look at alternatives. For example, you might say, well, you know what? We may not be able to retire living in the house we are, but we have a lot of equity. If we downsize from the main house, get a smaller house, pay cash for it, or, you know, a smaller house with a smaller mortgage, or, for example, as many retirees are doing, choose to live in another locale. You may go to another state, maybe a place where your kids are, or a place where the cost of living, taxes, and everything else is much cheaper.
Yeah, and it seems like reality really strikes home, because it's nice to plan until you put it down on paper, and then you can see what your income versus your outgo is now and what you anticipate it to be. And I would think that's the important part.
And that's where the budget is really important. You want to take a look at the budget, because you want to take a look realistically. Okay, you want to retire. These are the things you see yourself doing. Okay, what is all that going to cost? And then step three, which follows logically to that, is look at your assets and your sources of income. Do your assets, as they currently consist and the size, will those assets produce enough income to help you realize your retirement objectives? And you might want to look at, for example, other sources of income, Social Security. Maybe you're fortunate enough, you have some form of a company pension plan, or putting together and working with your advisor and structuring an annuity so you have the equivalent of a pension plan. Other things that you might want to look at. delaying retirement. Let's say you wanted to retire at age 62 or 64, 65, whatever it is. It may make sense to delay retirement to age 67 or 68, or as we're seeing many people now, age 70. There are a number of strategic reasons for doing that as we talk and move on to Social Security. The other thing that you might want to do is think about maybe, well, you retire from your job, but maybe you get a part-time job, something that you do. Or is there a particular hobby or skill set that you have other than what you've done for a living that you can help monetize and create some additional income? And when you look at those assets, you need to take a look at those assets now. Do they align up with you being retired? Because when you're working and contributing and saving, you can go through a bear market and you're probably not going to have to suffer as many consequences. But when you are relying on your assets for your main source of income, you do not want to go through a bear market like we did in 2007 to 2009 when the S&P 500 lost 58%. And that's probably the furthest thing on your mind right now because the stock market had one of the best years in returns in 2017. Folks, that isn't reality. That isn't the way the market works on an annual basis. We're probably closer to the next recession and bear market than we are a long extended bull market like we were back in 2009 and 2010. And know the risk levels for both of you that you're willing to take. I mean, it's very easy right now with stocks going up to say, you know what, I want to be fully invested in stocks. I believe in the economic growth and where the country's going, and I want to participate. Well, that can change very easily. Just put in a 20, 30%, 40, 50, 60% correction. That is something you do not want to experience at the beginning of your retirement because it could wreak havoc with your retirement plans. And once you have a plan or investment plan working with your advisor, make sure you stick to that plan and you don't alter it. There's a tendency in bear markets to be completely out of stocks and bull markets to be 100% in stocks. A lot of people are going into index funds now because they think it's a quick way to make money and it's a kind of no-lose proposition. Just likewise in 2009 and 10 and even in 11, when we had a 20% correction in the market, nobody wanted anything to do with the stock market because they were predicting the next financial crisis. So make sure if you have a plan, you stick to it.
Now, I would think that in addition to just straight out financial budget evaluation, health evaluation is also important because it will have dollar amount significance for you.
Oh, wise one. That was step number four, evaluating your health. And what you want to do, and you know, you worked all your life and now you're heading into retirement. You want to stay healthy. So you enjoy that retirement just like it was before you went to work. So you want to make sure you get your annual physical before you retire, get all your dental work done, especially if you're on a company plan. You want to get all that work done before you retire and then commit to a healthy lifestyle. That involves diet and exercise. And as you've been listening to Lifetime Income, we have a lot of different medical experts here that can tell you how to keep yourself healthy. And it's not just diet and exercise. Practice staying mentally sharp. One of my goals this year is to relearn Spanish. I used to speak Spanish fluently when I was in graduate school. It was a requirement in order to graduate because I went to an international graduate school. So learning something new, keeping your mind active, taking up a musical instrument, something that challenges your brain, as we have discussed here on the program with Dr. Small from UCLA's Longevity Center, 75% of Alzheimer's and dementia are lifestyle. So there are a lot of things that you can take to keep yourself active and very healthy. Now, why this is important, if you're looking at a retirement budget, you got to look at longevity. The longer you live, the more costly it's going to be with inflation. And then down the road, you have to look at what are the possibilities that either one of you or both could end up in a long-term care facility. And then that's why, even though you may be real healthy now, you're jogging, you're going to the gym, you feel terrific, you want to include $10,000 to $11,000 a year in your budget, put it aside in a rainy day fund, because sooner or later, as you age, you're going to be drawing on it, either for increased Medicare premiums, Medigap insurance, out-of-pocket medical expenses, procedures, those kind of things, they add up. As we mentioned, there's a study they do each year. It's going up about 6% a year. Healthcare costs for seniors are 6 to 8% a year increases. And the average married couple can spend $260,000 out-of-pocket for medical expenses. That was as of 2016. We'll have 2017 when that study comes out. We'll be reporting it here on the show. Step number five, determine when to collect Social Security and know your Medicare benefits. And this is very important. I don't know about you, John. What a difference. You know, in my company, we had a PPO, private provider for health insurance, and then all of a sudden at 65 going on Medicare, all of a sudden you're dealing with a government program. It's a little different. So you need to know and evaluate your Medicare. Know the plan. Are you going to go with a regular plan? Are you going to have Part D? Are you going to go with Medicare Advantage? What kind of Medigap insurance will you have? Because now you're dealing with the government. John, did you notice the changes when you went on Medicare versus, let's say, your private insurance?
You mean in terms of what, amounts paid out or the amounts that I had to pay?
Yeah, just amounts and just dealing with procedures. You know, with the PPO, at least the one we had at our employment, you wanted to go see a doctor, any kind of doctor. There's all kinds of gatekeepers when it comes to Medicare.
Well, I found that the payments were better under Medicare with the auxiliary insurance as well. It depends on the PPO you've got or the HMO. It really varies from state to state and place to place.
Yeah, it does. One of the advantages going on Medicare was obviously so much cheaper than going through a personal provider. Now, number two, another thing that you want to understand is know your Social Security benefits. Know what they're going to be at age 62 and know what they're going to be at full retirement age. And more importantly, also know what happens to those benefits if you delay. They go up 8% a year till age 70. So know what your benefits are going to be at age 66, full retirement for some of you, and what they'll be at age 70. And take a look at those two numbers and what they might mean. And why that's important is if you're married, chances are your wife will out-survive you. Women tend to live longer. 85% of Social Security beneficiaries are women. So by delaying Social Security to age 70, number one, you're going to get a bigger check. Number two, your wife's going to get a bigger check because she'll get half a year's. And number three, if she's the survivor, she will have a bigger check. And I highly recommend you visit the Social Security website. They have several publications on knowing your Social Security. One of the publications I highly recommend for your wives and you women listening to the program is Women Knowing Your Social Security Benefits. And it's a great document. You can find it on the Social Security website. I highly recommend you read it. It'll answer so many questions. What happens if you become a widow, if you're divorced, been divorced 10 years, or you've been married 10 years, but you're divorced, all the kind of things that you need to know about those benefits. And once again, look at those benefits. What happens to them if you delay? One of the biggest mistakes made in Social Security, and we've had people on Social Security here tell you, is taking it early at age 62 because there's the fear it's not going to be there or it's going to go away. If anything, they'll probably delay retirement benefits and maybe go to some kind of means testing. But John, I can't think of any politician that would say, you elect me, I'm going to take away your Social Security benefits. They'd be crucified at the polls. I want to move on to step six that takes on a new meaning beginning this year. And that is looking at your cost of living and your taxes. And this is a big issue now with this new tax law because it affects many of us as Americans and taxpayers in different ways. If you live in a high tax state, as I do in California, and by the way, John, I just got today a bill that California did not pay its bills. And so I got a $1,900 assessment. I got to read all the details on it because this is something I'm going to really want to talk about here on the program. But as a result of this new tax law, your deductions are going to be limited. If you have high state taxes, if you have high property taxes, those things are going to be limited on the new tax law. And the other thing And this is the good news here. If you're going to be retired, and let's say you downsize, your home is free and clear, so you don't have to worry about mortgage payments and things like that. You don't itemize. The good news is the standard deduction has gone up. It's gone from $12,000 to $24,000, and you get an extra $1,300 apiece for being over 65. So if both of you are 65, add another $2,600 to the $24,000. So $26,000, you pay zero taxes and you pay zero capital gains. And that's very important for tax planning. Also, you may want to consider moving to a low-cost state, a state that has low taxes or no taxes, because that's a further way of increasing your budget and lowering your expenses and increasing your standard of living. One of the things I've seen in my own practice here in California is about a third of our clients are choosing to leave the state of California and live elsewhere where the cost of living is cheaper, taxes are cheaper, everything is cheaper. And we've had a lot of clients that we're doing retirement plans for right now that are 2 or 3 years away from retirement. And one of the big questions is, would I be better off now moving to another state? Which is absolutely, most of the time, the answer to that is going to be yes. I had a client that moved 2 years ago from California to Arizona. They sold the big house here in San Diego for a nice profit. It was a seven-figure house. And of course, seven figures for a house in California is really nothing. They moved to Arizona to Sun City, where they were able to get a nice three-bedroom place for under $300,000, pay cash, free up income. And one of the things my client told me, he said, you know, Jim, my taxes went down considerably. They were in a 9.3% tax bracket here in California. Their tax rate dropped to 2.5%. Their property taxes in Sun City are almost next to nothing. Housing is cheaper. Their utilities, food, gas, everything. And he said, you know the surprising thing about it? He said, the infrastructure is better. He said, I don't have to drive around potholes, and it's easier to navigate around town with the freeway loops and the high-speed rail. So everything is much better. Because if you take a look at retirement, your three biggest expenses, housing, health care, and taxes. And two of those you can control by where you live. So a lot of people are considering strategic moves now based on cost of living and taxes. That's a big one.
All right. So that's six steps. Now, first of all, you're planning together when you're both alive, and then planning when the survivor is alive only.
Yeah. And when you're planning, you need to plan for two eras of your retirement. One, when you're both alive and you're both healthy. The second era is when you are unhealthy or your health begins to fade, or plan for when you're a widow or widower. And because there's a couple of things that change. For example, in Social Security, the survivor gets to choose the larger of his or her Social Security, whichever is larger. However, when one spouse passes away, that's one Social Security check that goes away. And for some of you, that could be a rather good portion of your budget. Let's say you take a couple that's making $40,000, $45,000 in Social Security. Let's say the husband passes away, so you take his Social Security, and maybe that's $26,000, but you lose the other $14,000 or $16,000 your own. And think of what that would do to your lifestyle if you lost your own Social Security, but only could have your husband. I had a client who was in a similar situation. His wife passed away before him. They were both living in a retirement home, and they had a two-bedroom apartment, a very nice place. And then after his wife passed away, of course, he lost her Social Security, although his, as the main breadwinner, was larger. But as a result of that loss of income, and it just made more sense, we were able to move him into a single apartment, which was so much cheaper because, you know, he could not afford to stay in that two-bedroom apartment because he did lose his wife's Social Security. So a lot of things can change in retirement. I want to talk about another step that's very important in staying healthy, and that is step 8, develop a social network. You might want to spend some time on social media, Twitter, LinkedIn. Stay in contact with people that share your own skills, because you never know, for, you know, portfolio reasons or inflation reasons, whatever it is, your expenses go up and you may need to get back into the workforce, get a part-time job. So it's good to keep social contacts and also develop a wide network of friends. That's important. You know, your kids have moved on. They moved away. It's important to have a network of friends. They help you. They can be around when illness occurs, or if you end up being the surviving spouse. And they've also recommended, you know, especially if you're in retirement, you're alone, you're a widow, widower, or you're just the two of you, getting a pet, a dog. They found out, John, that people that have pets actually live longer. They're happier. And so these are just some little things that you can do in the process, because it is a process, it is a step, and you need to follow and have a plan. Now, number nine is something we all hope we never have to face, and that is prepare for the unexpected. Sudden healthcare changes. One of you becomes seriously ill, or even worse, both of you. The loss of a spouse. And here's one, a bear market in the stock market and the bond market. I know nobody's thinking of a bear market in bonds because we haven't had one in 35 years. But believe me, another one is coming. And then also Mother Nature. Think of those people that lived along the coast of Florida or, let's say, Houston with those hurricanes last year. And even worse now with the change in the tax laws, at least last year, you could deduct any losses you had as a result of property and casualty damage to your home. Well, you can't do that now. But those are things that can come out of the blue, unexpected. Now, here's one. I've had a lot of my clients. All of a sudden, you're helping a kid. One of your kids gets divorced and they need your help. They're a single parent, a single mother. And you have to help them. Or they lose their job. And so these are the events that can alter your retirement. Now, two of the most devastating you should be prepared for is a change in health and a bear market. I mean, just take a look at where we've come in the last 18 years. In the year 2000, it was very easy to get 7 and 8% in the bond market. You could get 6 and 7% on CDs or treasury bills or two-year treasury notes. Take a look at what happened since 2000. We went from 8% all the way down to zero, and we're still in the low single digits. And what about those bear markets? In 2000, 2002, the S&P lost over 50%. The NASDAQ lost over 70%. And if you talk about the bear market of 2007 and 2009, the S&P 500 lost 58%. This is not the kind of thing you want to be looking at in your retirement. And what about if you are required to go into a long-term care facility requiring around-the-clock care? These are things that you want to stick to and you want to plan for. At least have a plan B, a contingency if something happens. And finally, step number 10, if you have a plan, stick to it. Maybe that plan is going to require you to budget or act in certain ways you never have before. All of a sudden, you're going from a paycheck to just living on your assets and Social Security. And so there's a different living standard that's there. And you need to adhere to your plan and don't revert to any old habits. Have an investment plan that protects your assets. Work with your advisor and don't do one of these plans where you get the pie chart and the asset allocation and it's set and forget. That's great in a bull market. It doesn't work in a bear market. And folks, I hate to tell you, they haven't repealed, nor has Donald Trump repealed, bear markets. We will have another one. And also make sure you handle the cost of living. For retirees, the cost of living averages about 6% a year increases, a lot of that coming from healthcare. And make sure that if you are dependent on your assets, you have an asset protection plan that keeps you safe, and you don't want to go through major drawdowns and a bear market. And more importantly, not only do you need to have an active investment plan, but you also need to update your financial retirement plan when you have family changes, asset markets change, or like what we have this year, major tax law changes. So you need to be active and proactive And just don't get yourself in one of these situations and set and forget. I see this happen so many times. People have a plan. They don't update it. And all of a sudden, some life-changing or economic-changing force comes into play. And all of a sudden, they're facing a situation they never thought they would face when they were retired.
Reminder that tomorrow on the program, Jim's guest is Amy Castoro. She's author of Bridging Generations, Transitioning Family Wealth and Values for a Sustainable Legacy. That's coming up tomorrow on the program. And right now it's time for our real life case study, which is a hypothetical illustration based on real life examples and people. Names and circumstances have been changed, and we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate all the points being made. Now, I'm assuming we're going to illustrate the points you've been making today in terms of your multi-point retirement planning.
Well, something close to it. Today's case study is how tax reform changes can change your retirement planning. And this really has a lot of emphasis on my own state here at California. And for those of you that live in states like New Jersey, Oregon, or even, let's say, New York, those high tax states. This case is the case of Sal and Sandy Lynn. Sal is age 63. Sandy is age 62, very close together, which works in well, by the way, for Social Security planning. They want to retire in 3 or 4 years. Based on their health questionnaire, there's a major difference. Sandy's side, boy, they live to be into their 90s. Sal's life expectancy is 84. Sandy is 94, moderately conservative. Give you a little background. Sal's a sales manager. He's a pretty savvy investor who closely follows many well-respected industry professionals. He's looking now to retire in the next 3 to 4 years and is looking for professional help to prepare for retirement and better understand how these changes in the tax laws are going to impact both him and Sandy. He enjoys his job and wants to continue working at least age 65 and 66 when he becomes eligible for Medicare and Social Security. Sandy is a substitute school teacher. She's been doing that now for about a little over 2 decades. She really enjoys her work. Unfortunately, health issues with her back coupled with arthritis are making it difficult for her to do her job. She would like to work for another 3 years, but is somewhat concerned about not being able to manage the pain, especially being on her feet. She has back issues. In retirement, she hopes to maintain the lifestyle and do lots of traveling to interesting places like the Galapagos Island and the Azores, which is right on the top of her list. Her biggest concern is having the money to be able to manage their finances. Taking a look at their risk levels on a scale of 1 to 10, they're at about a risk level of 4. Their portfolio risk was 7. That was because about 80-something percent of their assets were in the stock market. And of course, you know, they both know that this bull market doesn't go on forever, and that obviously as they head closer to retirement, they should be getting a lot safer, because they don't want to, especially when you're retiring 3 or 4 years from now, you do not want to go through what we went through 2007 and 2009. What was important to them was understanding how the new tax laws would affect them living here, managing their health care cost and maintaining a lifestyle. Their essential budget was $60,000, discretionary $24,000, for a total of $84,000. Sal's salary was $92,000. Sandy's substitute teaching brought in $31,000 a year, giving him a surplus of almost $40,000 a year. Now, in retirement, they thought they could reduce essential budget down to $55,000, discretionary $25,000, doing a little traveling. So the budget would be $77,000. Social Security for both of them would be $48,496, leaving a shortfall roughly about $28,000. Their primary residence was $720,000 market value with a small mortgage of about $125,000 remaining on that. Sal's retirement assets were $640,000. Sandy's 403B plan at the school district was $207,000. And they had about $165,000 mainly in cash on the personal side. They wanted to manage for the tax law changes and maintain a lifestyle. The big question is, could they retire, when they could retire, and what were taxes going to do? Because obviously, being the two of them right now, they pay more taxes. So basically, what we did is we took the portfolios in their retirement and repositioned them more into a balanced account. And this is really something you should be doing if you're 3 to 5 years away from retirement. You don't want to be 80, 90, 100% invested in stocks. That's just not prudent when we know this market has gone up considerably for almost 9 years now. We also did that with part of their cash holdings. So that brought in investment income of a little over $32,000. Their combined income would be roughly about $81,000, leaving them with a surplus of $4,000. One of the reasons we wanted to go to dividend paying stocks is with the $4,000 surplus, one of the things that doesn't leave much, you're going to have something for the cost of living. And this is where tax planning came in. What we did is under the old tax law, Sal and Sandy were in a 25% tax bracket. With the new tax law, they were going to drop down to a 22% tax bracket. However, given Sandy's health concerns, we recommended that she retire as soon as she wants. Having Sandy retire now would put them in, get this, a 12% tax bracket, which would lower their expenses and allow qualified dividends and long-term capital gains to be, check this out, tax-free. That's how this new tax law would affect. This tax law makes it easy now for Sandy to retire because they go from a 25% tax bracket down to a 12% tax bracket, and all their dividend income and capital gains, they would pay zero tax. With Sandy retiring now, they want to keep an eye on managing expenses. They should continue to pay down their mortgage with the goal of having it paid off in the next 10 years. With the mortgage paid off, their expenses would decrease dramatically. So what we're doing is basically the house with only $125,000, it's going to be free and clear in 10 years. So there's another big increase, or you might cause another source of income or a dramatic expense reduction coming in 10 years. Sandy retiring now also would allow them to maintain the lifestyle. With Sal still working, they can begin to take some trips they've been planning for, and Sandy can retire, work on her health, and help manage the finances. They have used stocks extensively to build their wealth over the last few decades. The great thing about what we're going to be doing now, with her retiring and them dropping down in a 12% bracket and where they are now, they will no longer be paying taxes on the dividends and capital gains. So some great things here, John, where this tax law has made a difference. And as a result of this, Sandy's going to be able to retire because, I mean, she loves what she's doing, but she has arthritis and the pain sometimes gets substantial and was making it difficult for her to continue working.
All right, Jim, and tomorrow again, your guest on the program is Amy Castoro, Bridging Generations, Transitioning Family Wealth and Values for a Sustainable Legacy. Well, since we are in the new year, what are we going to be examining here on the program on lifetime income as the year passes?
Probably in the first couple of months, and especially leading into tax season, we're really going to focus on this tax law change because we covered it. And of course, when they finally hastily passed it, it turned out a lot different in many ways than what they were originally proposing, either in the House or the Senate version. And just like this case we just discussed here, this tax plan, the way it's structured right now for Sandy and Sal, it allows Sandy to retire. And so this is going to affect a lot of you in so many ways. And we're getting more detail now. Before, there were some generalities. Now we have more details and guidelines. For example, pass-through entities, they put in figures in which they phase out those benefits. These are the kind of details that we have. We know that they kept the medical plan in. So a lot of these things are going to affect people. And we want to make sure that you fully understand this. And like in this case, I mean, one of the best things that we told Sandy and Sal, we were working on their plan last year. And of course, this new tax plan was coming in. And we said, you know, this could alter what you want to do. And of course, when we got the details, the good news when we presented their plan last week was to tell them, you know, the goal this year is basically Sandy's going to retire this year. And so they're going to be able to do that as a result of where the tax structure is going to be. And so there are a lot of changes that are going to come about. And we want to discuss them and make sure you fully understand them, especially if you're 3-5 years away from retirement. It's very important. There are certain things that you need to be doing now. So we're going to be covering those, John, in the weeks and months ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.